Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to tackle something that's, well, really important and changing fast: cybersecurity rules and initiatives. We're looking across the EU, the UK, and the US.
Yeah, and you might think, oh, that's just for the tech folks, but honestly, these changes, they're going to affect everyone, the devices we use, the services we rely on.
Absolutely. And our jumping-off point for this is an article called Cybersecurity by Kaijo Tuominen. We'll use the ideas in there as a base, but also bring in some other research to get the full picture.
Right, I'll be digging into the EU's NIS2 directive specifically.
And the UK National Cyber Strategy 2022.
Plus the US Cyber Trust Mark program. These are pretty big shifts in how cybersecurity is being handled.
It really feels like cybersecurity is moving from the server room to, well, everywhere. It's just woven into daily life now.
Couldn't agree more. It's fundamental to how our societies and economies work. These new regulations kind of reflect that growing understanding.
Okay, so let's dive right in. NIS2 in the EU. Kaijo Tuominen's article mentions this builds on the original NIS directive from, what, 2016?
That's right. But NIS2 is a significant step up. The main driver is really the increasing sophistication of cyber threats and, frankly, the potential impact they can have now.
So things got more serious, the rules had to follow.
Exactly. And one key thing is the scope. NIS2 covers way more sectors. It's not just the traditional critical infrastructure anymore. Think healthcare, digital services.
Okay, so like hospitals, online marketplaces, that kind of thing.
Precisely. A cyber attack on a hospital network or a major online platform can be devastating. NIS2 recognizes that these are critical too, in a modern sense.
Makes sense. So what are some of the concrete things NIS2 actually requires companies to do? Tuominen's article mentioned risk assessments.
Yeah, risk assessments are fundamental. It's about companies actively looking for where they might be vulnerable, understanding their own digital weak spots. It's not just box ticking.
You have to know the risks to manage them. What else?
Multi-factor authentication, or MFA, is a big one. Moving beyond just passwords.
Right, like getting a code on your phone.
Exactly that. It's like adding a second lock. Makes it much harder for bad actors to get in. It's considered a pretty basic but crucial step now.
Okay, and what about the human element? People are often the weak link, aren't they?
NIS2 definitely puts emphasis on security procedures for employees, training them to spot phishing emails, handle sensitive data properly. It's about building a security-aware culture.
That makes sense. And supply chain security, that keeps popping up everywhere.
It's huge. NIS2 has specific requirements here, as Tuominen notes. We've seen so many attacks where hackers get into a big company by first targeting a smaller, maybe less secure supplier.
Right, that whole weakest link idea.
Yeah, so organizations need to be looking at the security of their partners, their vendors, the whole chain.
Okay. And what about when things do go wrong? Incident management.
Yes, robust incident management is mandated. And this includes, crucially, a 24-hour notification requirement for significant cyber incidents.
24 hours, that's fast.
It is. The idea is to enable a rapid, coordinated response across the EU. And alongside that, you need solid business recovery plans. Basically, how do you get back up and running quickly after an attack?
Like having a digital fire escape plan.
That's a good way to put it. Minimize the disruption.
Now, the deadline. Kaijo Tuominen's article, and I think Computer Weekly too, mentioned October 17th, 2024. That's really not far off.
It's coming up very quickly, and the stakes are definitely higher with NIS2. There are stricter reporting rules and, well, potentially significant penalties for companies that don't comply.
So, real teeth behind these regulations.
Definitely.
The article also brought up cybersecurity trust marks. How do they fit in?
That's an interesting idea. These trust marks could act as a kind of visual signal, maybe?
Yeah.
A way for a company to show, hey, we meet certain security standards, potentially ones aligned with NIS2.
Like a seal of approval for cybersecurity.
Sort of, yeah.
Huh.
The thinking is it could build confidence with customers and business partners.
We touched on the expanded scope earlier, healthcare, digital services. What other kinds of sectors are now covered by NIS2?
Oh, it's quite broad now. We're talking energy, transport, banking, financial markets, digital infrastructure itself, public administration. It really casts a much wider net than the original NIS.
Sounds like a huge effort to secure the EU's whole digital backbone. Now, something else came up, interpreting state-of-the-art cybersecurity measures. That sounds potentially tricky.
It does, because state-of-the-art isn't fixed, right? Technology moves on.
Mm-hmm.
Some analysis, like from Darktrace, suggests it implies things like continuous monitoring, looking for anomalies, maybe even automated responses to threats.
So not just setting up a firewall and forgetting about it.
Exactly. It needs to be a dynamic, ongoing process that adapts to new threats as they emerge. Proactive resilience.
Okay. And there was also mention of specific articles 20 and 21 focusing on governance and risk management, again hitting on supply chains.
Yes. Those articles really drive home that cybersecurity isn't just an IT problem. It has to be part of the company's overall governance with clear responsibility at the top.
Yeah.
And yeah, the supply chain aspect keeps getting reinforced.
It shows how interconnected everything is.
Absolutely. And ultimately, the big goal of NIS2 is to harmonize these standards across the entire EU to create a consistently high level of cybersecurity.
Which must be a massive undertaking, but probably necessary.
Very necessary for a truly resilient digital single market.
Okay, that gives us a good handle on NIS2. Let's pivot now. Across the channel to the UK, their National Cyber Strategy 2022. Kaio Tuominen's article positions this as their plan for, well, navigating cyberspace.
Right. And the big picture goal for the UK is to establish itself as a, quote, leading responsible and democratic cyberpower. The official documents lay out 5 main pillars to achieve this.
5 pillars. Okay. What are the key focus areas? Can you break those down a bit?
Sure. Pillar 1 is about strengthening the UK's own cyber ecosystem skills, innovation, that sort of thing.
Right. Building capacity.
Pillar 2 is building a resilient digital UK, helping businesses and people protect themselves. Pillar 3 is about leading in key cyber technologies.
So tech leadership.
Mm-hmm. 4 is about advancing UK global leadership and influence in cyber matters. And 5, which is quite proactive, is about detecting, disrupting, and deterring adversaries.
That 5th one sounds quite direct, actively going after the threats.
It is. It involves detecting and investigating threats, sharing intelligence, but also taking measures to deter attackers and disrupt their operations. It signals that attacks won't be tolerated.
And protecting digital services, citizen data, those are core goals too, right?
Absolutely fundamental. Creating a secure online space where businesses can operate safely and people feel their data is protected. It involves promoting best practices, public awareness campaigns, the works.
It seems like a comprehensive strategy. How does it, you know, mesh with what the EU is doing with NIS2, especially now the UK isn't in the EU?
That's a key question. Despite Brexit, there's a recognized need for alignment. Cyber threats don't care about borders. Analysis suggests the UK strategy and their upcoming cybersecurity and resilience bill actually align quite closely with NIS2's objectives. International cooperation is stressed.
Okay, so practical alignment makes sense. And UK companies operating in the EU, they still need to worry about NIS2, presumably.
Oh, absolutely. If a UK business offers services in the EU market or has a presence there and falls under NIS2's scope, they have to comply. Simple as that. They need to meet the security requirements, the reporting deadlines, everything.
So even with their own strategy, many UK firms need to be NIS2 ready. There was even a suggestion I saw that NIS2 might become a sort of global benchmark, like GDPR did for data privacy.
That's a really interesting comparison, and it's possible.
Mm.
Given the size of the EU market, major regulations like NIS2 often do have a ripple effect, influencing standards worldwide.
Okay, let's hop across the pond now. The U.S. CyberTrust Mark program. Kaio Tuominen's article flags this as an FCC initiative for, like, everyday smart devices.
Exactly. Think about all that connected stuff in our homes now. Smart fridges, TVs, thermostats, fitness trackers, the Internet of Things, or IoT. This program is aimed squarely at the security issues with those devices.
Which often feel a bit like the Wild West, security-wise.
That's a fair description sometimes. So the goal here is to give consumers better information. A product with the U.S. CyberTrust Mark logo would signal that it meets certain baseline security standards.
Ah, like an Energy Star rating, but for cyber safety on your microwave or thermostat?
Pretty much, yeah. Empowering consumers to choose more secure products. Making security a selling point, hopefully.
And manufacturers are getting on board.
It seems so. Major electronics companies, retailers, trade groups have apparently committed to improving security for these kinds of products. A recognition that it can't be an afterthought anymore.
Good to hear. How does this U.S. program fit with the EU and UK efforts we've discussed? Is it just separate or...
It's seen as complementary. While NIS2 and the UK strategy focus more on critical infrastructure and organizational security, the CyberTrust mark zooms in on consumer IoT devices. It tackles a different but very important piece of the overall cybersecurity puzzle.
So different angles, but all pushing towards better security overall.
Exactly. Raising the bar across the board, building more trust in the digital world we all live in.
It really does feel like a global effort, tackling things at different levels, critical infrastructure, national strategy, consumer gadgets. Now, looking at how these overlap, we mentioned the UK strategy aligning with NIS2.
Yes, and the practical need for UK firms in the EU to comply with NIS2 really underscores that interconnectedness.
And the US Trustmark, even if it's a domestic US program, probably helps raise global awareness and standards just by existing, right?
It likely does. And this broader idea of trustmarks, whether in the U.S. or potentially linked to NIS2, is about creating clear signals of security. That helps everyone. Consumers, businesses choosing partners, it fosters assurance.
Okay, so we've got these big regulations, especially NIS2 with that looming deadline. What practical steps should organizations be taking, like, right now?
Well, based on the analysis, job one is really understanding your own situation,
right?
Doing those thorough risk assessments. Where are we vulnerable?
Know thyself, cyber style.
Right. Then implementing strong foundational security, like that multi-factor authentication we talked about. Getting solid incident response and recovery plans in place is crucial too. And don't forget the supply chain. Assessing vendor security is vital.
It sounds like a lot to get on top of.
It can be. It requires a holistic approach. And things like zero trust strategies can help meet these higher standards.
Zero trust. Can you explain that simply?
Think of it as never trust, always verify. Instead of assuming anything already inside your network is safe, you require strict verification for every user, every device, every time they try to access something. It limits potential damage if an attacker does get in.
Like having security checkpoints inside the building, not just at the front door.
That's a great analogy.
And what about tools like virtual data rooms? How do they help with NIS2?
They can be really useful for business continuity. They provide a secure space to store and share critical data. So if your main systems are hit, you can still operate securely. They also help meet requirements around secure data handling and backup.
Okay, lots of angles to consider. It really brings us back to that question Kaijo Tuominen posed. Are you or your company ready for it? And it sounds like readiness is more than just tech.
Oh, definitely. It's tech, yes, but it's also policies, procedures, employee training, leadership buy-in, and a mindset of continuous vigilance and adaptation. So it's an ongoing commitment.
Well, this has been really illuminating. We've covered a lot of ground, the EU's ambitious NIS2 directive, the UK's strategic approach with its national cyber strategy, and the US focusing on consumer device security with the cyber trust mark.
And the common thread through all of them is this clear, growing recognition globally that cybersecurity is absolutely critical in today's world. It's not optional anymore.
So as we wrap up, maybe a final thought for our listeners. Think about how these different initiatives from different parts of the world are actually interconnected. They're all aiming, in their own way, to build a more secure digital future.
Yeah, and consider the role of international collaboration in all this.
Yeah.
Because cyber threats certainly don't stop at borders. Building a truly resilient global cyber ecosystem, that's going to take ongoing cooperation.
A complex challenge, for sure, but one that definitely needs our attention. Thanks for tuning into The Deep Dive.